Ever get the feeling you're being watched online? It's data brokers. They collect your personal info, your browsing habits, where you live, and who you're related to, and then sell it to the highest bidder. Aura helps stop that. Aura automatically removes your personal info from data broker sites and keeps it off. It also monitors the dark web, protects your devices, alerts you to real-time threats, and more. Start your free trial at aura.com/listen. That's aura.com/listen for your free trial.
Kempire is brought to you by
Philadelphia, the Kempire After Dark, the villain era. It's coming to your city on July 10th. That is 2 weeks away. But this week only, until Sunday, there is a flash sale for premium tickets for $25 only. Don't miss our night of hot topics. We have a lot to talk about, from Real Housewives of Atlanta, Real Housewives of Miami, to The Diddler, and so much more. Don't forget, we are also coming to the City Winery in Atlanta on August 5th, and then we're in Union Stage on August 22nd in Washington, D.C. Then we're back in New York City at the Green Room 42. That show has not just the meet and greet, but we also have a live stream option. So even if you're attending these other shows or you're not in any of the cities, you have an option to be a part of the Kempire After Dark, the villain era live experience right now. Get your tickets today. More information is available in the description. But again, Philly, go get your tickets this week. Flash sale happening right now.
You're listening to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network.
It's day 31 of the Sean Diddy Combs trial, and the prosecution has started closing arguments. Yesterday was a very long day for all of us. They literally did not leave the courthouse yesterday until almost 8 p.m., preparing for closing arguments. So after today's closing arguments, do you think that the jury will be 100% convinced? Yesterday, we went and unpacked some of the jury instructions that the prosecution wanted adjusted. And this is why yesterday was such a long day. They were fighting for certain terminology to be explained or changed or removed. You may have also seen that there were rumors that the prosecution for the Southern District of New York had dropped charges. That was completely false. There were just allegations that were part of some of these charges that were removed based on New York and California law. We talked a lot about that yesterday, but let's talk about the prosecution's closing arguments. Sometimes this will be the determining factor when it comes to how juries will come to their verdict. Today's day 31 of our exclusive coverage here on the Kempire Channel of the Diddy trial. And as always, don't forget, you can get your Diddy trial updates along with extra content, extended versions of our Diddy updates as well, on the Kempire podcast. While you're there, don't forget to give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. On Spotify, you can engage in the comment section, sharing your thoughts on some of the things that we've been talking about. Yesterday, we had a long day just trying to pay attention to what was happening. I don't think what happened in court is necessarily of interest for all of us that are following this case. However, yesterday was very critical because they were deciding on both sides what would be included in regards to the jury instructions. Not only is the jury important when it comes to this case, it's those instructions. Because at the end of the day, this is what's going to be the guidelines for the jury to come to not guilty or guilty. And this is very important to the prosecution because they have to convince every single juror. That's why closing arguments will be sort of the cherry on top. We talked about this with Kirsten Brown a couple of weeks, well, last week, and we talked about it in part one. We did two interviews with her. Kirsten will be coming back so that we can unpack some of what's been playing out over the last week, because these are very critical, because a lot of people are saying that they're not convinced that Diddy will be found guilty in this. I don't know 100%, again, because I've told you before, I did a focus group that sort of was testing out what a jury would look like. And we went through some of what the prosecution wanted included in the jury instructions. And I said, these are very important details and you have to be very engaged. You have to know what you're doing. Hence why the judge made the decision to get rid of juror number 6. He could not explain where he lives. If you can't explain that and be clear and concise with that, you're going to have a difficult time being clear and concise when it comes to making your decision. That will benefit Diddy at the end of the day, having someone that's able to answer these questions. However, from the defense perspective, all they need is one juror to see his side. And they did not want a black man being removed. He was only one of two. The judge did decide to remove that juror, which is fine, or maybe not. We shall see. They did make a big stink about it. We've learned from talking with Kirsten, some of the things that they're talking about and triggering when it comes to the mistrial is so that later on, if they have to appeal, these are things that will be brought up then. Okay. All right. Let's get into day 31. So day 31, we're just going to do a summary because, again, we could do a transcript, but the transcript, again, it's not really a transcript, for lack of a better word. Shout out to Inner City Press. They've been really covering this case glowingly over the last few weeks. However, this prosecution, they thought that their closing arguments would be 4 hours. This is why yesterday, if you watched our recap, why the judge permitted whoever's going to handle closing remarks, it's okay if you do not come in for yesterday's charging conference, because they have to really rest up. They also have to know what they're going to say, because this is a critical part of the case, these closing arguments. And you have to be ready for that. All right, so let's get into the summary of what played out yesterday and what played out today when it comes to the prosecution's closing arguments. This would actually be a reason to be in the courtroom, because it would be interesting, especially when the defense does it, because now the prosecution has laid out their case for the last few weeks. It would be interesting to see how the defense is going to poke holes in that. They've done a good job. I'm never going to take away from the defense. I feel like the defense did do a good job at poking holes, doing what they need to do when it comes to future appeals. But did they do enough? Remember, they decided not to call any witnesses. Diddy decided not to take the stand. A lot of people did not expect him to take the stand, despite his attorney, his lead attorney, Mark Agnifilo, told TMZ that, "I don't know if I'd be able to keep him off the stand." But it was definitely in his best interest, along with not calling witnesses. Remember, Kirsten chimed in saying that, no, it's in his best interest not to call any witnesses for character witnesses or to call experts, because at this particular point, we already know who Diddy is. But did Diddy do what the prosecution's accusing him of in regards to these charges? And we talked about the charges as well. Reminder for those that might be just joining us, no charges were dropped. Elements, allegations that were included in these charges were streamlined. This is the language that the prosecution used, streamlined to make it easier for the jury. I'm not sure how much easier, but I can appreciate that for the jury. So according to NBC News, who has had us covered in regards to our summaries, and shout out to Law and Crime, who we utilize, and some of the other content creators and journalists that we've been citing here during our recaps. If you're new here, we always cite our sources. And if we forget, it's because we forgot, it was not intentional. But I don't think we've forgotten this time around. All right. So prosecution to deliver closing arguments this morning at 10 a.m. They did not finish until 4 something this afternoon. So prosecutors will deliver closing arguments starting at 10 a.m. today. They expect to take around 4 hours for their closing argument to the jury about their 6-week case against Sean Diddy Combs. The defense will then deliver its closing arguments, which are expected to take a few hours. Judge hopes to charge the jury tomorrow. I don't think that's going to happen, because I don't believe the defense were able to be able to do that today. So to do their closing arguments. So federal prosecutors want to tighten their case against Combs, asking a judge to strike language regarding the attempted kidnapping and arson from jury instructions, according to court documents filed on Tuesday. We went through those court documents already, which started a hamster wheel of conversation that charges were dropped, and that is not true. While Combs still faces the same racketeering conspiracy and S-trafficking counts, which include kidnapping and arson allegations, prosecutors said in a filing to the U.S. District Court Judge Aaron Subramanian that they understand that the court's desire for the streamlined instructions to jurors. Specifically, the government has removed instructions from the charge relating to attempted kidnapping under both California and New York law. Attempted arson under California law and aiding and abetting S trafficking, the note added. And again, we went through this yesterday if you missed any of it. So here's what the prosecution and defense are arguing. Since the trial kicked off more than 6 weeks ago, I can't believe it's been 6 weeks. Well, technically 5 weeks of us covering it, because remember that first week was jury selection, which is really critical. And now part of me, and I believe we did talk about the jury. We definitely talked about the jury, but that would have been an interesting week to cover because it's so critical to this case. So since the trial kicked off more than 6 weeks ago, the government claims that Combs, the Bad Boy Records founder and rapper, leveraged his business as a, quote, criminal enterprise to sexually abuse and exploit women for decades. The jury heard from Combs' staffers who testified the music mogul was an abusive boss, and they were forced to work grueling hours, clean up after his hotel nights, and at times procure drugs for him. The jury also heard from two of his former girlfriends, Cassie Ventura, and a woman by the pseudonym Jane, who testified that Combs repeatedly wanted them to engage in drug-fueled marathon freak-offs with S workers, even though they didn't want to at times. They also testified that Combs was physically violent and abusive. The defense has argued that Combs' actions were within the realm of his personal life and his girlfriend's, and that prosecutors failed to show that his staff criminally conspired with Combs. So, the court was in session. The judge has called the court to order as a lengthy day of closing arguments is set to begin. The jury will have the right of self-determination, as Judge Subramanian told the court that once closing arguments are over, they will be able to determine their own schedule for deliberations. Several of Combs' family members took their seat in the second row as a nervous energy coursed through the courtroom. The two attorneys who will deliver closings, defense lawyer Mark Agnifilo and prosecutor Christy Slavik, seem to be cordial to each other on this tense day. They were spotted standing off in a corner sharing a laugh. Because at the end of the day, yes, they're on opposite sides of this thing, but at the end of the day, they're not the ones facing jail time. You know what I mean? They're presenting a case. If anything, I can understand Diddy might maybe not sharing a laugh with the prosecution. Let's move on to what else is happening here. Assistant U.S. Attorney Christy Slavik. This would be a question that Kirsten could answer, but Kirsten sort of talked about this before in regards to, I can't remember, she said she was good at rebuttals or not good at rebuttals, but she has her strength. Like, she can do certain things when it comes to certain parts of a prosecution like this. However, you have to know your strength. So I wonder how they decided who was going to do closing arguments on both sides, on the defense side versus the prosecution side. Because I'm actually surprised that I have not seen him in court, but based on transcripts that I've seen and read and what we've covered, I never felt like he would have been the one to close. I would have thought that maybe they would have used Xavier Donaldson because he is a black man. And they've been leaning into saying that they are just coming after a powerful black man. But maybe they think that won't work because the majority of this jury is not black. So the assistant U.S. attorney, Christy Slavik, rose from the prosecution's desk and began the government's final arguments that Combs used his business empire as a criminal enterprise for S trafficking, forced labor, kidnapping, arson, bribery, and obstruction of justice. Combs could spend decades behind bars if a federal jury convicts him on all counts, which include racketeering conspiracy and S trafficking. The rapper and music executive has pleaded not guilty, insisting his temper and other proclivities don't make for federal crimes. So Combs donned a light-colored pants and white sweater this morning. I'm so surprised that he's wearing light colors. Wouldn't you want to look a little bit more professional? That looks more like we're going out to the Hamptons, but that's me. It's sort of giving the President Obama wearing a tan suit in the big controversy, but I don't think President Obama would wear a tan suit to court in this particular situation. If anything, I would have thought that Diddy would have wore a suit. I wonder if that's another question I would ask an attorney or Kirsten Brown. Is there a reason why Diddy might dress more like Mr. Rogers with the sweater and the button down versus dressing in a suit? I could see that in the light colors. Okay, there's a whole psychology behind that. The light colors are to kind of soften him. So he looks like grandpa as opposed to looking like the evil predator that he's been described to be. Let me look at me figuring it out for myself. But maybe it's not. So they say Combs donned a light-colored pants and a white sweater this morning. Not white. He's trying to be all innocent. When the defendant entered the courtroom, he gestured to loved ones, putting his hand to his heart. Oh, like this? He took his glasses out of his folder, put them on the table, and rubbed his palms together. I'm surprised that his daughters, I don't know, I haven't heard anything, but I know the sons have been coming in regularly, but the daughters were there for like the first couple of days, so I'm surprised that everyone is there again. Slavik began her address to the jury by painting Combs as the leader of a criminal enterprise, one who engaged in bribery and attempted arson, to name some of his alleged crimes. At the core of the enterprise was S trafficking, Slavik continued. She told the jury that Combs manipulated both Cassie and Jane through power, violence, and fear to get what he wanted. And he doesn't take no for an answer, Slavik said. Combs has exhibited shockingly similar violent behavior for years, Slavik argued. The prosecutor cited the infamous 2016 beating of Cassie Ventura at the Intercontinental Hotel in Los Angeles and an alleged 2024 choking and slapping of his then-girlfriend, Jane. Although highlighting 8 years apart, but very similar attacks. Combs leaned heavily on those closest to him to loyally carry out all of his orders, the prosecution said. I'm talking about the defendant and his trusted inner circle, Slavik said. He was the head and it existed to serve his needs. Again, which goes back to all of us saying, why wasn't KK subpoenaed to testify? Yes, they had multiple assistants, but all of those assistants were sort of like underlings. KK was sort of a chief of staff, a power position. She was the one that everyone reported to. Combs was powerful in his own right, but through the support of his business, became even more dangerous, Slavik asserted to the jury. She began delving into the racketeering charge against Combs, highlighting the concept of a criminal enterprise. So she has to paint the picture for the jury so they understand, because that's been the difficulty for laymans and for some attorneys. Is there an enterprise here? A criminal enterprise. So she began delving into the racketeering charge against Combs, highlighting the concept of a criminal enterprise. A group of people came together to protect Combs' power, reputation, and to help fulfill all his desires, Slavik said. Those desires included committing crimes and keeping them from being discovered by law enforcement, she went on. It was his kingdom, Slavik told the jury, and everyone was there to serve him. So this is going to be very critical for her to paint the picture, because so many people still don't see RICO here, including some attorneys. We've talked about this. So she has to make it very clear. She has to drive it home to the jury that this is what it is. Like, this is her last effort so that they understand. They continue, said young and eager staffers. As that's a quote, young and eager staffers hungry to break into the world of music management were always at Combs' beck and call, Slavik said. These young assistants didn't blink an eye and did whatever it took to make Combs happy, even when it meant facilitating crimes, according to Slavik. Employees were paid by Combs' companies, thus turning work resources into fuel for his crimes, the prosecutor said. I feel like they did drive that home in regards to how that was intermingled, even though the CFO said that he never paid, he never saw a mixing of those personal and business aspects. Slavik urged the jury to use its common sense against the defense's claim that a criminal enterprise didn't exist, just because no one testified explicitly that they were in one. So you remember we talked with Kirsten Brown and she mentioned that the prosecution will go first, the defense will go next, and then the prosecution has the opportunity to do a rebuttal. And that's important because remember, the burden of proof is on them. So it makes sense that they will be able to rebut. They will have the last word. So she urged them to use their common sense against the defense's claim that a criminal enterprise didn't exist just because no one testified explicitly that they were in one. They might not have even known. She told the jury that when a person agrees to their boss's demands to buy drugs, they're agreeing to a crime. When a person locks their boss's girlfriend in a room after he stomped on her face, that person's agreeing to commit a crime with their boss, Slavik continued. And that is agreeing to participate in an enterprise, the prosecutor asserted. Slavik urged jurors to pay attention to a map when they look back at Combs' alleged criminal acts. She says when S workers were paid to cross state lines or cell phones were used, those acts amounted to violations of interstate commerce laws, according to the prosecutor. Go back to the prosecutor's letter to the judge in regards to the jury instructions. We talked about interstate commerce laws. In continuation, they said whether a Combs staffer moved a single pill or 1,000 at his behest, those actions were criminal, the prosecutor said. You know what the defendant did, Slavik said. He gave them to Cassie and Jane. This is drug distribution, plain and simple. The government explains the four elements of racketeering, which is important because even all of us have been talking about this and people are still very much confused. So there are four elements of the racketeering charge against Combs, Slavik explained to the jury as she walked through how the government case met each element. The first is conspiracy to participate in a criminal enterprise, which she insists Combs' employees did by agreeing to help him commit crimes. One example she gave was when the chief of staff, Christina Curram, made sure drugs and cash were delivered to Combs' hotel rooms. So the first conspiracy is to participate in a criminal enterprise. She might not have been happy, but she did it, Slavik told the jury. She was a member of the enterprise and has been referred to as an unindicted co-conspirator. The second and third elements are the impact on state or foreign commerce, and that Combs was knowingly a part of an enterprise. The former is fulfilled because Combs arranged for S workers and drugs to travel across state lines, Slavik said. The latter is met because Combs is the through line of his businesses, which she said existed only because of Combs. Finally, the fourth element is that the enterprise agreed to commit at least two crimes. This is important. The fourth element is that the enterprise agreed to commit at least two crimes under the RICO Act. Slavik says that Combs' criminal enterprise agreed to commit crimes related to drugs, S trafficking, bribery, and arson as they helped cover up his alleged crimes. So Combs engaged in closing arguments. At times of this closing argument, this is NBC's observation, the journalists that they have in the building. At times of this closing argument, Combs sat back in his chair, looked ahead, looked down, and sometimes cast a glance toward jurors. He'd been warned earlier, as you know, in the trial against doing anything that would interpret or could be interpreted as communicating with jurors. Drugs were an essential part of Combs' freak-off, so he and his staff were all involved in buying and distributing drugs, Slavik told the jury. She called back to evidence from Brendan Paul, who was one of the last assistants to testify. A former assistant who was instructed by Combs' chief of staff, Christina Curram, to ask for money reimbursing him for purchasing drugs. Combs needed a constant supply of illicit substances to give to his victims and made sure to have his staff drop off more when he ran out, Slavik said. He gave them to Cassie and Jane. This is drug distribution, plain and simple. The defendant restricted the movements of others at least three times, which were all examples of kidnapping, the prosecutor said. After beating Ventura in 2009, he forced her to stay in a hotel room until those wounds healed, Slavik said. Slavik also cited testimony of longtime assistant Capricorn Clark, who said that she was once forced to go with an angry Combs and search for Kid Cudi. The defendant was allegedly in a jealous rage when he learned the rapper had been seeing Ventura. We also have to keep in mind, too, I don't know if they would consider this legally kidnapping in regards to when Capricorn Clark was held by his staff to be submitted to a lie detector test for 5 days after being accused of stealing jewelry. While it may be in question who cut a hole in the Porsche belonging to Scott Mascuti or Kid Cudi, Slavik insists that it was clearly done on Combs's orders. Remember, there was speculation that there was female DNA that was found there. In a quote, they said he was 100% behind Kid Cudi's car blowing up, Slavik said, adding that Combs literally said it would blow up while he and Cassie Ventura left the country. The rapper was targeted by Combs to control Ventura, Slavik said. The arson was designed to show, quote, no one who crosses him gets away with it, Slavik said. Slavik just hit the 1 hour mark on her closing statement. Each side was allocated 4 hours to make their arguments to the jury. The prosecution ended up going over. I'll just give you a heads up on that. I'm glad we're reading this summary versus the transcript. If I get my hands on the transcript, maybe we will in a separate video. But today is just a summary. This is what we've been doing since day one of this trial. A summary of what's been playing out when it comes to this trial. When Combs sought to cover his tracks following the 2016 Los Angeles hotel beating of Ventura, that amounted to an act of bribery, the prosecutor said. It does. I mean, that sounds clearly like bribery. He's trying to stop a crime. Slavik cited testimony about Combs allegedly paying off security guards at the Intercontinental Hotel. Remember, he paid $100,000 to one security guard that ended up splitting that with other personnel within the staff. Combs, in full, quote, damage control mode, used money and power to buy and manipulate witnesses, according to Slavik. It appears that the theme of Slavik's final argument to the jury is that Combs and his inner circle refused to take no for an answer. She repeatedly stated the phrase, emphasizing it on the beginning as she described Combs' role at the top of his alleged criminal enterprise. When describing the push to bribe guards for the 2016 hotel beating footage, Slavik told the jury that his employees would stop at nothing to keep the video from getting to law enforcement. Hence why I feel like, again, Christina Kern was very much involved in that. She was the one at the hotel at the time. Again, I will never understand, and I probably will ask this to Christina Kern again. Kirsten Brown, the prosecutor, why? What did she not testify? And how does she get away with not testifying? And I know a lot of people are speculating, will she be charged later? If Diddy gets off on this, I don't see her getting charged because I don't feel like there's a strong enough case. If Diddy gets off on this, I don't think there will be a strong case to charge Christina Kern. She could clearly say, I was doing what he wanted me to do. So I don't understand how she is not at least testifying. I'm not saying that she deserves to have charges or that she should be in jail, but she got away with not.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Ever get the feeling you're being watched online? It's Data Brokers. They collect your personal info, your browsing habits, where you live, and who you're related to, and then sell it to the highest bidder. Aura helps stop that. Aura automatically removes your personal info from data broker sites and keeps it off. It also monitors the dark web, protects your devices, alerts you to real-time threats, and more. Start your free trial at aura.com/listen. That's aura.com/listen for your free trial.
Not testifying? All right. And I could also understand making an excuse for Gina not testifying. She is a victim of Diddy. I can understand her probably being scared from testifying. But Christina Curran, some can speculate that she was a victim too. All right, looking plain out of my head. Okay. So the defendant had overwhelming motive to use any means possible to cover up the 2016 hotel beating, Slavik said. Bad publicity surrounding the videotaped assault would, quote, ruin him, according to the prosecutor. Those actions amounted to a criminal act, Slavik said. Paying for silence is influencing testimony, she told jurors. Slavik moved on to S trafficking charges against Combs in relation to Cassie Ventura and Jane. She broke down three elements of the charge: recruiting, enticing, and harboring the victim, acting with reckless disregard, and interstate commerce. Combs used force, fraud, and coercion to get the women to sleep with S workers in his fueled freak-offs, Slavik said. The prosecutor noted that coercion is more complicated, as it can mean that a victim believes refusal would subject her to physical, psychological, or financial harm. Because I know people have said, well, they all wanted to do it. They seemed excited to do it. So this is very important for Slavik to emphasize to the jury. The prosecutor noted that the coercion is more complicated, as it can mean that the victim believes refusal would subject her to physical, psychological, or financial harm. Both can be said to both Jane and to Cassie Ventura. It could also cover harm to the victim's reputation. Remember, they also said that Diddy threatened to release S tapes on both Jane and Cassie Ventura. That was one of the reasons why Cassie's family had to give $20,000 to Diddy. Days later, ended up sending it back to Regina Ventura. All right, so the prosecution showed jurors 27 headshots of the men hired for sex during Combs' freak-offs and hotel nights. The images shown in nine rows of three serve to remind the panel that Combs allegedly hired S workers to perform with his girlfriends while he watched from a short distance away, videotaping the acts. Combs love-bombed Jane early on after meeting him, charming her with overwhelming affection before introducing her to the concept of hotel night, Slavik told the jury. Slavik accused Combs of grooming Jane and giving her drugs as she learned what Combs liked sexually to keep him happy. Jane agreed to one of his fantasies when she was high and arranged for a hotel night with an S worker, the prosecutor continued. Jane became resistant as time went on and wanted these nights to drop. But Combs plied her with drugs and manipulated her into continuing, Slavik told the jury. He even used paying her rent as a way to control her, the government said. The defendant looked dejected as Slavik launched into him about his freak-offs and the possible criminal liability connected to those rendezvous. Combs sat back in his chair away from the defense table with his head down, writing notes during much of Slavik's arguments about these illicit acts. He did manage to write some observations on post-it notes and hand them to his defense lawyer, Mark Agnifilo. And this is behavior that he's been displaying, according to inside sources and based on these summaries that we've been doing. He's been very active. Some people might say that he was almost the lead prosecutor, well, the lead attorney on his case. The prosecution showed a flurry of text messages reminding jurors that Combs allegedly threatened Jane with S videos if she didn't stay in line. A panicked Jane sent text messages to Combs' chief of staff, Christina Curran, about the music mogul allegedly telling her those tapes could be leaked. Curran instructed Jane to give Combs some space and said that she talked to him in hopes of keeping his boss from doing anything rash, text messages showed. Combs frequently arranged, this is why, again, Christina Curran not testifying, and I'm wondering, the jury is probably thinking the same thing, and probably assumed that they would see Christina Curran testify. So Combs frequently arranged transportation for Jane to travel across state lines and engage in sex with men, Slavik said. He had Jane flown to and from New York, California, Miami, Las Vegas, and Turks and Caicos, the prosecutor pushed. At the same time, Cabral, a frequently used S worker, was also being transported across state lines for their hotel nights, Slavik told the jury. Remember, there's a charge for the transportation of S workers. And a lot of legal experts feel like they're definitely going to get him on that charge, which I forgot how many years. I think it's like up to 10 years for that charge. Slavik reached the 2-hour mark of the government's allotted 4 hours of closing argument. So before we continue, guys, just a reminder, it's an easy and free way of supporting the channel just by liking. Be sure to subscribe if you enjoy content like this. We don't just talk about Diddy here on the channel. We cover everything in pop culture. Earlier today, we were live recapping The Real Housewives of Miami's latest episode. That was a doozy. And don't forget, we are raising money for the center. We are raising money for the center for Pride Month. We literally only have, what, 4 more days until Pride Month is over. However, we still can reach our goal of $5,000. So if you can, I ask that you guys please donate. You'll be able to donate somewhere along the video. If you're watching from your phone, probably below the video. Help us reach our goal of $5,000. Your 100% of your donation goes to the organization. And although it is Pride Month, the community center that is the center provides services for the LGBT community, but everyone really in the community as well. Thank you to everyone that's already donated or will donate. And for those that have shared our donation, our Pride Month fundraiser. All right, let me take a sip and then we'll get back into this. That's why I said this was long. This is why I would only read the summary, because if we read everything that Slavik was saying for 4 hours, I've already been talking a lot today. So Slavik reached the 2-hour mark. Combs had his hands clasped in his lap and his head down as Slavik continues to hammer her case against him to the jury. He appears downtrodden. On occasion, Combs looks up and glances over to the jury with a look of defeat on his face. Okay. Again, this is interpretation based off of NBC's journalists that they have in the room. Some other people that are in the room might say, like, I don't know, he seems cold. He didn't seem defeated. But this is their perspective. And I think it's important to emphasize that, because I think despite us loving NBC's coverage so far of this case, we have to keep in mind that this is open to their interpretation. I mean, he could be stoic for all we know, but they say he appears downtrodden. How does downtrodden look like? Like, oh my God. So, and on occasion, Combs looks up and glances over to jury with a look of defeat. What does the look of defeat look like? I mean, I can imagine what it looks like, but I'm just like, did it look like that? Unless I was in the courtroom and I read this, I'd probably be like, they're putting a 10 on 20 in regards to this. And I just emphasize that because to keep an open mind, like, did he look defeated, or was he trying to manipulate the jury to feel sorry for him? Like, that's not who I am. So NBC continues. They said that as time went on with Jane, she began to resist the idea of hotel nights, and Combs was forced to change tactics from the carrot to the stick, Slavik told the jury. Slavik recounted a time in October of 2023 when Jane told Combs that she didn't want to do hotel nights anymore, insisting that she needed a break. Combs agreed to spend a day with her without strangers, Slavik continued, but Jane somehow found herself sober in a room having sex with 3 men. That's just a reminder that he was very manipulative. And even when she says she didn't want to do it, there were a couple of times when she mentioned in her testimony that she says she didn't want to do it. And then somehow, even on her own birthday, she ended up having to do a freak off for him. The night went very badly, insisted to the jury. Jane vomited twice, and Combs insisted she get back to the men waiting to have sex with her, the prosecutor said. He coerced her even when she wanted to stop, Slavik told the jury. The prosecution turned in its attention to an alleged June 8, 2024 beating that Jane suffered at Combs' hands. The date is significant because it came after federal agents raided Combs' properties so that the music mogul knew he was under investigation but didn't change his behavior, Slavik said. Combs beat up Jane in her home on that day, telling her, "You are not going to ruin my night," according to the prosecutor. A male S worker was called to the home where he and Jane allegedly had sex for Combs' entertainment, the government said. All right, so they took a break for lunch. the judge gavel proceedings back into action. So the prosecutor cited a hotel night in July of 2024 when Combs is allegedly resorted to drugs to control his then girlfriend, Jane. While the defense would suggest there's evidence Jane was a willing participant that evening, Slavik said otherwise. But what it really showed was that she was super, super high, the prosecutor said. Before Jane, there was Cassie, Slavik said, as she transitioned her closing argument to tackle the S-trafficking charge related to allegations made by Cassie Ventura. And this makes sense to start off with the Jane and then end with Cassie, because if anything, when you look back on this case and us covering this case, Cassie's testimony came across very strong. But it's important to remind the jury of that testimony, because remember, that testimony at this particular point is not that, it's not at the forefront of their minds. But before Jane, there was Cassie. They said Combs transported Cassie Ventura across state lines and international borders, harboring her at various places where freak-offs took place, the prosecution said. Ventura testified that she never engaged with S workers without drugs, she said. Slavik told the jury that Combs plied her with drugs, beat her, threatened her, and forced her to perform sex acts with S workers despite her shame over it all. And I think Cassie, again, why her testimony was so important is because although Jane had different things with Diddy most recently, Cassie's relationship with Diddy, she was far younger at the time. She was under contract. She literally was under contract as an employee to him. And there were years of abuse. There were also pictures of that abuse. There's footage of that abuse. So they said Ventura was at Combs' side for a decade, but the relationship felt more like a shameful job to her. Remember, she said that. She said she started to feel like an S worker. It was not normal, the prosecutor said. He regularly threatened and beat her, and he plied her with drugs, and he forced her to perform sex with S workers in front of him. It was her job and her shame. They said Ventura was only 19 when she signed on to a 10-album deal with Combs' record company, Slavik reminded the jury. So we're seeing, they're emphasizing because her testimony was so important. Remember, her testimony is probably what triggered, not probably, because you saw they talked all about it, is what triggered these federal charges. Not long after her first album release, Combs made it clear that he wanted more from her, she continued. And Combs exerted control over her as both her boss and her sexual partner. He told her what to do and refused to take no for an answer, the prosecutor argued. Combs decided what Ventura wore, what her nails looked like, who she spoke to, and so much more, Slavik told the jury. And despite the hours Ventura spent in the recording studio, he would never allow her to release another album, Slavik said. He would not allow her to make money for her music, making her dependent on him, the prosecutor said. The prosecution showed multiple pictures of a bruised and beaten Ventura. The images included wounds suffered after Combs allegedly flew into a rage after learning she once dated Kid Cudi. Another was of her with a busted eyebrow when Ventura was purportedly thrown into a bed frame. Any one of these attacks would have been life-changing, Slavik said. But for Cassie, it became her normal. Combs' inner circle helped him keep Ventura under his thumb anytime that she tried to escape. Because, you know, that's been the narrative too. Why didn't she leave? Slavik told the jury that there was no safe space for Ventura as Combs exerted his control over and threatened her with violence. One of Combs' bodyguards may have iced her injuries, but he was ultimately playing both sides, Slavik said, as he reported everything back to Combs. Slavik had been making her closing arguments for 3 hours at this particular point. The government told the court her speech was likely to end around 4 hours. Slavik reminded jurors they've seen video of Ventura having sex with S workers in acts allegedly forced by Combs. She's performing just like Jane. Don't be fooled. It is anything more than that, a performance. Because what you will see probably from the defense is you can tell from the video footage, you can tell from the screenshots, they were willing, consensual partners. They were excited about it. Look at the text message. They talked about being excited about it, about initiating it. And what the prosecution, based on what I'm seeing here, is saying, don't read too much into that. It was nothing but a performance where they were wearing wigs and costumes. They are orchestrated and directed, at times focusing on escort and not her at all. This was his fantasy, not Cassie's. Sean Combs caused her to have sex with S workers using coercion. Combs' head was down as Slavik replayed video of him assaulting Ventura in March 2016 in the hallway of the Intercontinental Hotel in Los Angeles. So they played this again in the closing arguments. They want this fresh because remember, this was played early. Although it's been brought up, this was played early in the trial. As you know, the video first aired on CNN. Shows Ventura in bare feet headed to the elevator and away from the room where Combs and an S worker remained. Combs then comes running down the hallway in just the towel, throwing Ventura to the ground. Ventura curled up as Combs kicked her repeatedly before trying to drag her back down the hallway. And remember, what we saw in court was a longer version. We did not see the CNN version. So it said not only did he assault her in the hotel and bribe guards to buy the footage of this attack, but Combs also showed up at Ventura's apartment after banging at the door with a hammer, Slavik reminded the jury. Combs knew he had to keep Ventura under control, she said. Oh, wait, let me just read the top of this. So Combs' assault of Ventura at the Intercontinental Hotel should leave no doubt that he committed S trafficking. He used force to try to get Ventura back into the hotel room where the S worker was waiting so that he could continue with the freak off, the prosecutor argued. Not only did he assault her in the hotel and bribe guards to buy the footage of his attack, but Combs also showed up at Ventura's apartment after banging at the door with a hammer, Slavik told the jury. Combs knew he had to keep Ventura under his control. The prosecutor cited several instances in which Ventura appeared to be trapped in her abusive relationship with Combs. He created a climate of fear, Slavik said. Violence was in her mind whenever he proposed freak-offs. Ventura allegedly put herself at risk by not complying with Combs. She didn't want to make him angry because when he was angry, he would be violent. He could be a scary person, Slavik said. While the defense might try to say Combs' highest-ranking employees were unaware of his freak-offs, the prosecution points out the times they appeared to help it happen. Slavik noted how Christina Curram got S-workers to the hotel rooms and that she did damage control. Combs' head of security mentioned it to Combs' former assistant and helped buy drugs for Combs, Slavik said. A former assistant saw a video of a freak-off on a staff iPad. She continued, I almost forgot about that. That came out in testimony as well. It defies logic to think his most trusted lieutenants were in the dark, Slavik told the jury. There's also a text message most recently when Brendan Paul was testifying where they talked about the S worker being in the hotel lobby. They knew what was happening and they helped him do it. Interstate transportation for S workers, I'll say, two of the five counts against Combs, is likely the least talked about part of the case, and that's reflected in Slavik saving it for just the last portion of her closing arguments. Slavik reviewed travel itineraries for S workers who were flown out across the country for Combs' freak-offs. She went over the payments as well, which were put on Combs' American Express card. The traveling freak-off show was always in motion and coming to a glamorous locale near you, Slavik said. Ventura and male S workers traveled through Los Angeles, Miami, New York, Atlanta, and the Turks and Caicos Islands and Ibiza, according to travel and credit card records cited by the prosecutor. S workers named Paul Cabral and Reggie from the agency Cowboys for Angels were all among the go-to hires for Combs, Slavik said. They frequently traveled to meet with Combs and his girlfriend, often making a mess where they stayed, according to the prosecutor. The jury was reminded of a text Jane sent to Combs telling him of bodily fluid stains left at the London West Hollywood. So they take a brief break. All right, let's get back into this. Ventura and Jane had no choice but to perform sexually for Combs, even as they became sick and their bodies wore down, Slavik said. I'm going to just double check and make sure everything's going on, y'all. Because if you remember, when we first started this, I had some tech issues. I just want to make sure everything was still going. Days-long freak-offs were fueled by ecstasy, Molly, and cocaine, according to the prosecutor. Both of his girlfriends regularly suffered from urinary tract infections, UTI, but were still forced to have sex at Combs' direction, Slavik said. Slavik veered into the concept of forced labor. Okay. By revisiting the testimony of Mia, a former assistant who worked for Combs, and said that he SA'd her. Combs used a pattern of force that caused Mia to believe that she would be harmed if she didn't comply with his wishes, Slavik told the jury. The former assistant testified that Combs slammed her into a wall in addition to violence she saw him subject Ventura to, Slavik said. When Mia was in South Africa with Ventura, her job was threatened if she didn't answer the phone. The prosecutor continued. Mia knew that she couldn't tell Combs no, Slavik argued. Ventura's lawsuit and Combs' reaction to it weaves this whole story together, Slavik told the jurors. Combs knew the civil action could lead to prosecution, according to the prosecution, so that he had to circle the wagons and keep his most trusted advisors, such as chief of staff and security head, quiet and unseen. Paying people off with a brown paper bag was not an option. He needed to stay under the radar, Slavik said. Again, why we did not get a testimony from, unless this is a foreshadowing of charges being brought against Christina Curran and maybe his security. I'm pretty sure that's not off the table. They really could. They've been cited multiple times for doing illegal activity. So they continue. They said Slavik's closing arguments have now gone past the 4-hour, 35-minute mark. The government had earlier estimated that its closing would take about 4 hours. Slavik sat down after a nearly 5-hour address. That's a long time. To the jury, making the government's case against Combs on all 5 charges. She thanked the jury for their dedication, noting that much of the evidence was hard to hear and see through the 6 weeks of trial. Combs is guilty, Slavik said, and he was able to get away with it because of the power and influence he held. It is time to hold him accountable. It is time for justice, Slavik said, and it's time to find him guilty. So, again, that left no time for the defense to present their case. Judge Sumeranian sent the jurors home for the day. The panel will hear from Combs' side of the table tomorrow. Defense attorney Mark Agnifilo has said previously he'll need about 3 hours for his summation. Slavik's closing lasted about 4 hours and 49 minutes. That's a long time, hence why I said I'm not going to read the transcript, because that is a long time to go through. But based off the summary, how would you guys determine that the jury will come back? Do you think, and again, I think it's hard to, even off the summary, to even come to that conclusion, because again, it will be based off of the jury instructions. I have not seen the final version of the jury's instructions, but they're very specific. And they have to go by those jury instructions and not just by, oh, I feel like he's guilty or I feel like he's innocent. They have to go by, did he do what the government is charging him with? We shall see. This is day 31 of our coverage of the Sean Diddy Combs trial. I did see a sample of the charging sheet that they had, the verdict sheet, I should say. But again, that wasn't the final version, because yesterday spent most of the day trying to figure out what will be included, what won't be included, that kind of thing. That caused a stir yesterday in regards to whether or not they were dropping charges. As you can see here, a reminder, the 5 charges have not been dropped, but certain elements have been streamlined according to the prosecution. And some of those things were streamlined because of the issues that the defense has brought up. in regards to things being unconstitutional. So they want to make it easier for the jury to see the picture that they're trying to paint of Sean Diddy Combs. It's going to be interesting to see the final verdict and how long the jury will take to come to that verdict. But first, tomorrow, the final day of the week, we will have the defense. And this will probably work out better because I don't know when they will start deliberating. I don't think they'll be deliberating over the weekend. So they'll probably start deliberations on Monday. That is what they expected anyway. So they'll have the weekend to sort of rest up and start deliberating before July 4th. It'll be interesting to see if they come to a verdict before July 4th. I'm sure they probably are motivated to come to it. The last thing they probably want to do is come back after July 4th of this case. Guys, I want to know your reaction to our summary of the prosecution's closing arguments today. Let's continue this conversation in the comment section. As always, thank you to our King's Guards. Thank you to our channel members. Thank you to our subscribers. And thank you to those of you that haven't subscribed, but you've been watching our updates on this Diddy trial. Be sure to continue to like the video and be sure to listen to our podcast version on the Kempire podcast. While you're there, don't forget to give us a 5-star review. And don't forget, the Kempire After Dark, the villain era, is coming to a city near you. First up, literally 2 weeks from today, I will be in Philadelphia at the City Winery there. This week only, though, they are doing a flash sale. So you can get premium tickets for only $25. So go get your tickets if you've been waiting, or if you will be, or you didn't know that I was going to be in Philadelphia. We will definitely be talking about Housewives. We will definitely be talking about Diddler. We will definitely be talking about a bunch of stuff. So go get your tickets today. Then I'm coming to Atlanta August 5th, DC August 22nd, and back here in New York City September 12th. Ticket information will be available in the description with everything else Kempire, including our merch, including our Cameo. Everything will be there. Thank you all for being here. Again, thank you for watching and for listening. See you in the next one.
Thanks for tuning in to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network. As always, you can hear Kempire on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. More information can be found on KempireRadio.com.